Okay, what we're going to do today is we're going to talk to Sam, one of our Year 11 students, a little bit about Romeo and Juliet. And I'm Miss Strachan, and I'm going to talk about why Romeo and Juliet is still relevant today. So I think Shakespeare wrote the play over 500 years ago, and he was talking about war, and he was talking about love, and he was talking about relationships. And now we still talk about war, if you think about civil wars and the wars that are going on at the moment in Syria, if you think about the war that happened in Iraq, all these kinds of things are still happening and we're still talking about them. And Shakespeare obviously thought they were important enough to bring to the stage so that everybody, the common people as well, had an understanding of what was going on in their time. And love and relationships, we still think about marriage, we still think about what our parents want us to do and what our parents' expectations are. And that's exactly what Juliet was thinking at the time, and Shakespeare was highlighting how society didn't really allow women to do exactly what they wanted at that point in time, and that was called patriarchy. And obviously relationships between your family, relationships between men and women, they're all still relevant today, so it's quite interesting to think about it. It's just that Shakespeare wrote it in a slightly hard to understand way. So Sam's going to tell us a little bit about the plot, and we've got Miss Lowry and Miss
Cowling.
Miss Cowling with us as well. So poor Sam.
Yeah.
So what do you know about the play then, Sam?
Well, it starts off with a fight, then there's a party. It's the Capulet party, and there's intruders from I forgot the other family.
Is it Montague?
Montague. They came to the party, and because it was a masked party, they were then spotted, and there was a man called Romeo, and he liked a girl called Rosaline, and then seen Juliet walk in front, and then he said some quotes about her, such as...
Oh, we need to find.
Yeah, I don't think of that, do I?
Aha! Let's get to...
Yeah, so... He called her, he said, have not saints' lips and holy palmers too, and he said that she was, that she'd teach the torches to burn bright.
Yeah. She's like obviously the main thing of the dance, well, the ball to him. So.
Yeah, the main focus point. Yeah. So he's immediately forgotten about Rosalind, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I really like that quote about the torches shining bright, because you immediately get an image of sort of fire and passion and brightness come to your head. So, and that, to me, seems like the sort of feeling that some people might have with love at first sight. It just sort of ignites in them. And it's like Romeo's just seen Juliet, and he knows from that moment on that she's the one for him. And Rosaline... it's history. He's over her.
Well, he doesn't mention her again for the whole play. That's who she's not even.
No,
she's not even thought.
Because also Benvolio, he was helping Romeo because he was lovesick.
Yeah, exactly.
As well.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yes. And he said the tears were augmenting the morning dew, weren't they?
Yeah.
And that augmenting is just adding to the morning dew. So, gosh, Romeo must have been crying quite a lot.
Yes.
I think.
I think Benvolio really has that sort of, he's a nice character, quite a friendly sort of person who is trying to make Romeo feel better all the time. He doesn't seem to be the one who is first there in a fight. He sort of is a bit more passive, and obviously there's a fight scene at the beginning and all tempers are frayed, but then when the prince says it, end of fighting, Benvolio seems to go along with that and said, look, okay, we're going to do something different, we'll go to this party. He didn't mind being with the Capulets at the party, because he was going to have a good time with Romeo and make Romeo feel better, which I think is probably why Romeo was so upset when Benvolio gets killed.
Yeah, because I think Benvolio was very peaceful as well.
Yeah, he
definitely
was. Yeah, he said, he did say to Tybalt that he didn't want to fight him, didn't
he?
Yeah.
Right at the start.
Yep.
Does his name, is that where that comes from? Is it like benevolent?
Benevolent.
Yeah, it could be.
Benvolio, and that's kind of makes
That's when it
so when people
of.
Watched it in the audience, they'd sort of link that and like go, he must be a nice character because of his name. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the same with Tybalt, isn't it? Mm. My class, and we call Tybalt the tiger because he's fiery and passionate and quite angry, and tigers are quite angry and aggressive animals, aren't they?
Yeah.
So that's how we linked him. And
he's sometimes called the Prince of Cats as well, sort of a scratchy kind of, you know, how you imagine a cat pouncing. Like, I suppose the tiger is the Prince of Cats, isn't
he? Yeah, isn't he is. And Tybalt as well is always looking for the next fight, it seems. So until he dies, he's constantly looking to fight the Montagues because he doesn't like them at all.
Because also, moving on, Juliet talks to the nurse as if it's her own mum.
Yeah.
Because her mum's never really there.
Yeah.
Hasn't got much part in her life.
And she's only young, isn't she?
Yeah, and the nurse was there to talk to Juliet about the marriage as well, because the mum and dad wanted Juliet to marry Paris.
Mm. That's right, yeah.
So women back then quite often didn't have the choice, and I suppose still in some countries in the world, women still perhaps don't have the choice as to who they can marry, and it's more of a transaction than an act of love.
Yeah, it's arranged, isn't it? It's called an arranged marriage for a reason, because somebody else tells you who you're going to marry and when you're going to marry them and why. You've got to follow those rules.
Now, why do they like Paris? What do you know why it is that they've decided that Paris is the one to marry Juliet? Any idea why it could be?
Well, maybe because he's a Capulet as well.
Yeah, so that's definitely part of it, isn't it? Because they wouldn't want him to marry Romeo.
Because also Paris, he doesn't like, Juliet doesn't like Paris because she's got her eyes on Romeo.
Mm, yeah.
And maybe the dad doesn't like Romeo because he's a Montague, not a Capulet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And also, Paris is meant to be very rich, isn't he?
Yeah.
So they want their daughter to marry someone who's got a lot of money, so that they then get some of that as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, Paris doesn't ever do anything wrong. I'm sure he would be a fine husband, but she loves Romeo, doesn't she? And it's that, you know, that passionate, no eyes for anybody else sort of love that
you
teenagers...
You couldn't be happy with anybody else, could you?
Yeah, so. couldn't be anyone else.
It's that idea of first love as well, isn't it?
Mm.
Because they've never really... Romeo's love for Rosalind was obviously just an infatuation, whereas his love for Juliet is so strong that he's willing to kill himself rather than not be with her.
Yeah.
Mm. So, Sam, you mentioned the nurse earlier. What do you think what's the role of the nurse, do you think, within the play?
Looking after Juliet, because the mum isn't there, as I said. So the nurse just comes in as a role of another second mum.
And why do you think that, why is that so important?
Well, every child, has their ideal mum.
Mm.
And I think the nurse just is a really good role to Juliet for the mum.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely.
Yeah, and Juliet's mum had her around about the same age as Juliet is now.
Yeah.
Juliet's only 14, so Lady Capulet, can't speak, she's really young. So and the nurse seems a lot older, doesn't she?
I think it's helpful as well to have a couple of characters. The friar's another one who's sort of doesn't have an allegiance to either side as well, so she can speak. I suppose the nurse would be more towards the Capulets because she works for them.
Yeah.
But she can listen to Juliet without judging as such, I suppose, the same as the friar, a bit more of a neutral grounding, perhaps. The friar's also an interesting character, I think.
Yeah.
He's very cunning, isn't he?
Oh, I don't know much about him.
No, that's okay, because we find out about him in quite a lot of detail later on, don't we?
Yeah.
But, you know, he's the one who arranges for them to secretly get married. He's the one who arranges for Juliet to take the poison, or the sleeping draft, yeah, which will send her to sleep and make her look like she's dead. And he's the one who arranges for Romeo to spend the night with Juliet before he has to be exiled to Mantua. So he's quite important.
And yeah, he's the one that sent the letter to tell Romeo, but yeah, never delivered.
Yeah. Oh, it didn't get there, did it? Yeah. That was a disaster.
But just it goes to show, I suppose, it adds to the idea or the theme of fate that they were never supposed, it was never supposed to all work out in the end anyway, that we get in the prologue, the star-crossed lovers. Fate always intervenes and they can never be.
Yeah, it's never going to work, no, unfortunately. But I think the friar is also interesting because he links to the idea of religion. And do you think religion was important back then?
Yeah.
Yeah, why do you think that, Sam?
Well, showing the Capulets and the... I forgot the other
Montagues.
One. Montagues. Well, they don't like each other, so they're very strong in what they believe, so I'm guessing that they would be strong about their religion as well.
I think you're probably right, actually. I think they would be strong about their religion. And also, it was... Christianity was very... prominent.
Yeah, that's they the all word. Believed in God and stuff.
Yeah.
Because they had all the crosses, didn't they, on necklaces and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, they did. And so then, and getting married, you couldn't have sex before you got married, so it was really important that Romeo and Juliet got married quickly because they were so passionate about each other that they might have done something that they would regret. Mm. And you obviously can't have sex before you're married, so they had to get married in order to then be able to be together.
Yeah.
So
they couldn't just, like nowadays, you can't just live with a boy, or you weren't even allowed to sort of spend time with a boy on your own, or a girl in your case, or whatever. But yeah, so you weren't allowed to be alone with the other sex. It was all very prohibited until you were married, and then you were allowed to. So that's why it's so crucial.
Yeah.
They had to do it that way, and in a church with the friar.
Yeah, and with God's permission, because, you know, you would ask for God's permission to do things, like get married and, you know, to be with someone. So they're being quite risky by going and getting married in secret. And actually the friar is being a little bit controversial as well, because he really shouldn't have married them without the permission of their families.
Yeah.
So he's quite a controversial figure for a religious person, because... And maybe Shakespeare is trying to say, actually, not all of the rules should be followed all of the time. Yeah. And we still think like that today, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, even at little things like school uniform being grey trousers, people get annoyed about that, don't they? And say, well, why should we follow that rule? Mm. But this is a much bigger idea that Shakespeare's trying to highlight, that actually not all the rules all of the time are the right thing. And I think maybe Shakespeare was trying to say that.
Yeah.
You know, that just because you don't agree with each other's family, it doesn't mean that you can't find peace and be together.
Yeah. And also, I suppose, the theme of religion, sorry, I just missed a little bit then, but I don't know if we've already gone over this, but the theme of religion links to the final scene too.
Yeah.
Where they die.
Yeah.
Because that would also have been very controversial at the time, to kill yourself in a building of worship. I mean, only up until... Well, about 50 years ago, I think, it was still illegal to commit to try and commit suicide. So that would have been very shocking to the audiences at the time.
Yeah, and suicide is obviously against religion. Religion doesn't allow for suicide. So, yeah, I mean, Shakespeare was talking about some ideas that people would have found really, really quite appalling, really.
Yeah,
because you see it as God has given you life, so you shouldn't take that away. It's all up to God as to whether you take your life has been taken away or not.
Yeah.
So you should never try to, especially in a place of worship, would probably be the worst place you could do it if you were.
Yeah, and also the fact that it was a religious society at the time. And even the religion is linked to Juliet, because they use a lot of celestial imagery, and that's, they talk about this. Juliet is compared to the stars, she's compared to the heavens, she's compared to the sun.
Mm. And Juliet's compared to a swan, isn't she? In one part.
Oh, I'm not sure about that.
I'm not sure. That
Yeah, I've got a piece.
Have you got a quote with it? That's fab. Yeah, so all of that celestial imagery is linking to the importance of religion, because people would look up to the sky for answers, because people were quite superstitious and didn't understand quite what some things that happened that we understand now.
Yeah. And also they see each other in the play almost as gods.
Yeah.
Almost Romeo seems to sort of worship Juliet and Juliet worships Romeo. So it's almost like they don't have the space for
the worship of God.
Yeah.
Because they're too busy worshipping each other.
Yes.
And it's interesting at the end, there's so many clues that Juliet is still alive right at the end in the final scene. Shakespeare almost plays with his audience. He keeps talking about the colour of her cheeks.
She's really rosy.
Yeah.
One of my students actually told me about apparently a different alternative ending that Shakespeare wrote as well, and he used to sometimes mix it up apparently, where, I haven't researched this, so I'm not sure, but I think he maybe had studied it in drama or something, and apparently in the alternative ending, Juliet wakes up and kisses Romeo, who's just taken the poison, and then has tasted the poison from his lips and dies that way.
Wow.
Which I think is an interesting alternative ending.
Yeah, it says here, death that hath sucked the honey of thy breath hath had no power yet upon thy beauty. Mm. So, you know, she's meant to be lying there dead, but actually she still looks as beautiful and as normal as she would ordinarily, and it just suggests that she's still alive, and there's crimson in thy lips and in thy cheeks, so she's still got colour in her lips and her cheeks, and that's in Act 5, Scene 3 at the end, and it does just suggest, that's only a couple of the clues, there's lots and lots of them, that suggest that she hasn't actually been taken by death as yet, but Romeo doesn't recognise these little clues that Shakespeare's given us, and it's quite tragic, really, which links into
He's so distraught, isn't he? That's the thing. He doesn't think at all. He's completely... most of the time when he's with Juliet, he can't concentrate because of the fact that he's so in love. It's sort of... everything goes out the window.
Yeah, and it is a shame because actually, in the end, he has... you know, he's missed all the clues. He's killed himself, and... in killing himself, you know, you could almost say that he's also to blame for Juliet's death, because she wouldn't have killed herself if she hadn't have woken up to see him dead.
Yeah.
So it's almost a catalogue of errors.
Mm.
And it starts with, perhaps, Friar Lawrence allowing them to get married. So you could even, you know, if you were to say who is to blame for the death of Romeo and Juliet, you could say that everybody has a little bit of blame to take.
Yes.
Because you could take it further, can't you, and say that, well, like they do at the end, that is the arguments between the houses, that it's their fault, because if they were allowed to get married, they were allowed to be in love, none of this would ever have happened.
No, so, which they realise at the end.
Yeah, so the moral, maybe, of Shakespeare's tale is that, you know, maybe coming back to a Christian ideal, that you should love your neighbour.
Yes.
Because... so. That possibly is part of what he wanted to say.
Yeah, because a lot of deaths would have been saved if they were friends.
Yeah, it would have been. And
maybe, so many older people who died wouldn't have died, would they?
Yeah, and also, you know, maybe that's something that we need to think about nowadays, you know, that actually you should love your neighbours and you shouldn't be going against people just because they're from a different culture or they have a different belief to you. Because religion causes most of the wars, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that's why it's just so relevant, isn't it? That's why I feel that Shakespeare is always relevant, because those moral issues, as you said at the beginning, Miss Strachan, just keep cropping up throughout. So even if we don't have the same lifestyle as people did back then, we can still take a lot of, take lessons from the plays that Shakespeare wrote.
So yeah, I think that's a nice place to leave it, really. I think, you know, we've talked about the characters, we've talked about some of the themes. Obviously, we talked about war and love and relationships and, you know, power and, you know, the law with the prince coming in and stopping the fighting, and obviously religion as well. So we've really covered pretty much everything. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.